Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cania. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and together we make up the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire, where we talk about all things Lions. Sadly, Eric, on Sunday, the Lions fell to the Seattle Seahawks. We were inflated throughout the week with the acquisition of Snacks Harrison, and they built us up. And now they broke us down by a rather listless performance outside of the first two drives on Sunday. All right. We will delve into all that in a second.
Yep.
We're going to start with the injury report. Number one, Theoretic, limited in practice with the knee.
Yeah, limited both days. This is an upgrade from the last 2 weeks when he has not been practicing. So progressing in the right direction. So possible he could be available on Sunday.
Ziggy Ansah with the shoulder, my record remains intact.
Yeah, and the fact that he hasn't upgraded in, 6 weeks now, it's not, I wouldn't consider this designation any better than where he's been. So he's still kind of in that injury report purgatory.
Have some respect for the process. That was perfect. All right, good. All right, next, Taylor Decker with his back. This was mildly surprising if we didn't notice that he didn't play the last few snaps of the game on Sunday.
The last eight snaps, yeah. And so there was concern because it wasn't really noticed. There was no information given to us in the press box. And we just, if you weren't paying attention, you really didn't even notice it. Now, I think part of that is a tribute to the fact that Terrell Crosby played well. Eight snaps, and they knew it was a passing situation, so they were pinning their ears back and coming after him, and he did a good job holding his own so that we didn't notice it. But now we know it's a back injury that caused him to miss his last eight snaps. He's had some limited practices, but the fact that he's practicing is relatively good news. If for whatever reason he can't play, I think Crosby, he gave us a taste of what he can do, so... I think there'll be already one where, Minnesota's a tough challenge, so we'll get into that in a bit, but yeah.
Next up, TJ Lang with his hip.
Yeah, this is, if you remember, the season he came over, so 2016-17 season, when he came over from Green Bay, he had hip surgery, and that lingered into the season and caused him some other problems. Hasn't had a hip issue this year, and now all of a sudden that props up. He did miss eight snaps as well, but those eight snaps came on the first drive of the second half. So that might have been a scheduled situation. It could have been something at halftime that kind of locked up on him and they wanted to let him work it out. But it looked kind of scheduled because he sat there with his hat on, looked, and then went right back out and played again. So another thing worth monitoring, but it kind of looks like they're just giving him a little bit of time to rest his weary bones.
All right, the next two is a double dip at the same position. First, Christian Jones.
Yeah, he left the game early and was replaced by Jalen Reeves-Maben.
Also on the injury report.
Yeah, and both of them are limited. So kind of hard to tell exactly. It could go either way with both of them. But the fact that they are putting in limited practices are at least encouraging that the potential is there for them to play.
All right, but we don't want to bury the lead, but we always do the injury report first. The Lions have traded Golden Tate over to the Philadelphia Eagles, and we receive back a third-round pick from them in next year's draft.
Yeah, we're going to get into this in a minute. I have a whole page here of questions that people have asked us.
All over the place. I bet they're angry. I bet they're excited.
Well,
about everything.
I think at this point we're a couple days removed from this, so it's more. What are we doing for moving
the seven
forward?
Stages of grief for some folks?
Right. It's where do we move forward at this point?
Nine phases. I don't know.
Seven.
All right.
Yep. Kubler-Ross. All right. Kubler-Ross is seven stages. Okay.
Is that a book?
Yeah. That Kubler-Ross was the one that created the seven.
All right, I'm not as advanced as you are. I barely learned how to read. You know that. I was raised by bears. They were good bears. Yeah.
Let's talk about Golden a little bit more in a minute, but get through the rest of our traditional opening podcast parts.
All right, next up is the players Lions have added. They've added linebacker Kelvin Shepard.
Yeah,
from the Giants, or correct. Most recently from the
Giants.
Yeah,
most recently from the Giants. He started 17 games for the Giants over the last 2 years, 63 starts in his career, over 100 games played in 7 years. So he's been good enough to play in the league for a long time, but he's been unemployed this year so far. Out of LSU, he doesn't have real good straight line speed, but he has some agility. He was projected to be a guy who could potentially move to outside linebacker coming out of LSU, but stuck in the middle in the NFL. That speed is a bit of an issue, but he understands the two-gapping system because he has some experience in playing in 3-4s, and so I don't know if he is. I don't know if this is something that they're doing because Christian Jones and Reeves Maven are hurt, or if this is just to add a little bit of depth because they had to play Trevor Bates last week, and I don't know how excited they were about that, but gives them another added off-the-ball linebacker with experience.
All right, and then to the practice squad, Jack linebacker Alex Barrett brought in back to replace Garrett Dooley, who went on the practice squad IR.
Yeah, this is actually yesterday. Barrett was added, and then tight end Jerome Cunningham was cut. Then today, Cunningham was re-added back to the practice squad, and Dooley went on to the practice squad IR. So they basically gave Cunningham a day off, unpaid. But they added in the long.
You got a note.
Yeah, in the long and short of it, though, is that Barrett is taking that Jack spot over Dooley. Dooley has a hand issue. Undrafted free agent out of Wisconsin this year. We've talked about him briefly in the past. Is a guy who I liked. I thought he was draftable. They might want to hold on to his rights and keep him, pay him that practice squad money for the rest of the year, just so that they have him under contract. They can sign him to a futures contract then next year, and somebody they could work on developing. Or if he wants out, though, they could give him an injury release, and then he could try and latch on somewhere else.
All right, Marvin Jones restructured his contract, which frees up $2.2 million in cap space. Now, this may lead Vince Vielhaber to ask, do you think the Jones restructure after the Tate trade was due to potentially acquiring someone through a trade that subsequently fell through?
I do. I do think that that's what happened. When it first happened, I wasn't entirely sure why they would do it because there were no moves made. So it kind of looked like hey, we're confident. When you restructure a player like this with a few years left on their contract, what you're essentially doing is you're giving them more guaranteed money in order to reduce their current salary space. So they took $2.2 million of his base salary and converted it into a bonus. And that bonus then becomes paid upfront, and then it becomes a potential cap casualty later if they decide to cut him. So it becomes a penalty if they want to cut him later. So when you make a move like this, I thought it might have been hey, Marvin, we're moving on from Golden Tate here, but we still are confident in you. And to show you that, we're going to give you your bonus right now and guarantee that money, which shows you that you have more stability and that you are our guy moving forward. But what Vince says makes a lot of sense as well. And the more I've thought about it, I think Vince actually makes more sense than what my original thought was. And that I do think they were trying to make a move and they just couldn't. You know, you're on that clock where when time runs out, and it's really unclear who they were going after. But you don't just make these moves, you know, very quickly. They take time. You have to talk to players, talk to agents. So if they were restructuring him, it sounds like this was something that was planned in advance in order to free up some space to potentially try and add another piece that just didn't work. But I don't know what piece it might have been, and I haven't been told anything that confirms it, but it makes a lot of sense to me.
All right, moving on, takeaways from the Seahawks game. The first one, The Seahawks had 2 weeks to prepare and execute the perfect game plan. So are you basing it off of the Lions playing such a great game against the Dolphins after having a two-week break? And to put it, would we just be better off if we got 2 weeks between every game?
Well, I do think that the Lions did look very good against the Dolphins because they had time to plan. I think the bye week is something that we gloss over a lot of times, but it can be very it can create opportunities for teams and that can, you know, execute their game plan. And Seattle had a very good game plan on how to take Detroit out. And then Wilson was fantastic. I mean, that was as good as Wilson has played. And he was putting balls in spots that really were difficult for anybody to make. And he was just dropping them, like, right over the fingers of some of the cornerbacks. And
stopping our streak of making good quarterbacks look bad.
It was as good of a game as I've seen him play. Like, I can't reiterate that enough. It was a perfect QBR game for him, and everything he threw seemed to hit. It was
14 of 17 impressive. For 248 yards and 3 TDs.
But nothing he ever threw ever looked in jeopardy. You know what I mean? It always looked very poised and accurate, and there's a lot that goes into it, but when a quarterback executes like that, It was just a good game plan and good execution by the Seahawks overall.
Lions waited too long to involve Snacks Harrison. Why do you think that might be?
You know, they tried to incorporate him slowly in the first quarter. And I got these stats came from Jeremy Reisman of Pride of Detroit. He put these out. I thought these were worth mentioning. In the first quarter, he played 31% of the snaps, just 4 out of 13. And then...
Lions' best quarter, by the way.
And then... offensively, for sure.
Yeah.
And then in the second quarter, they started using him a little bit more, up to 68%. And that was really where the things fell apart in that quarter for them. But then in the third quarter,
it started to fall apart. Well,
I mean,
I'll score 21-0.
But that, I mean, we'll get
total
to
total disaster.
We're going to get to that in a second, too, because that's another one of my points. Then in the third quarter, he's up to 71%. And in the fourth quarter, he's up to 86%. And when you look at the statistical, running that what they were able to execute in the first quarter, Seattle was knocking out over 5 yards, 5.5 yards a carry. Then it went down to 4.5. Then it went down to 3.9. Then it went down to 3.2. And so what we see is the adverse relationship here, where the more that Harrison played, the lower the run total got, right? And so you can see there's that direct correlation. Now, when you take it a step even further and look at the snaps that Snacks was on the field versus the snaps when he was not. When he was not on the field, they ran at 5.6 yards every carry. When he was, it was only 3.3. So as he gets more involved and as he gets more acclimated, he's going to make more of an impact. But it goes beyond him as well. But I think when we look at this moving forward, he's going to be used right off the bat. And if he's used right off the bat, it can really change the dynamic early, as opposed to they waited until the second half to really get him involved, and that's when it was kind of too little too late.
AJ Ivanovsky asks, how much more can we expect to see Snacks in this upcoming game? He should have a better understanding of the defense with another week of practice.
Yeah, and I think he showed a very good understanding in the 4 days that he had. Now he has another week, and I think he's just going to continue to grow. And that's kind of scary because he played very well when he was on the field. So when we talked last week about him being a perfect fit for this scheme, that should become pretty evident moving forward, I would think.
All right, Lions have had a hard time stopping momentum when they get rattled, that's for sure.
Yeah, and that's the second quarter. Typically it's been the third quarter that's been a problem for them all year, but this time it was the second quarter, and that goes back to Seattle's game plan. They got ahead of them early in that second quarter, and they used that momentum, and the Lions got put on skates, and they couldn't stop. And 3 quick touchdowns, and then ball control, and away you go. And at that point, you're now down 2 scores going into the half, and they just didn't have the right mindset to come out of that. And they weren't ready, I guess, to rebound. And that's been something that's been a problem for them in each of their losses.
Now, could this be part of a bigger problem where they have a hard time making short-term adjustments because they let the Seahawks jump on them in the second quarter when the Lions were very effective stopping the Seattle offense on the first drive and then scoring on their first drive. But things then got progressively worse from there. And now you can take a look at this. You know, Seahawks stuck with their game plan and it eventually started working. Or they saw some things, made some quick adjustments, and the Lions weren't able to keep up with that. What do you think it was more of?
I think it was more they had a game plan, but I think that I think they had a game plan, they executed, and they didn't need to make many adjustments. I think the Lions were more caught off guard, and I don't think it was initially, because like I said, we've talked in the past about how Caldwell has not brought them in with to be prepared right off the bat. I think this team has been prepared right off the bat, but it's been those in-game adjustments that have been slow, and I think the Lions just weren't able to make them fast enough. I don't think the Seahawks did a whole lot different. I think they had a plan to run the ball, get the time of possession, and have Russell play well. And he played out of his mind and made things really easy.
All right, turnovers, and you, as you mentioned, the Seahawks' time to prevent possession, very detrimental to the team.
Yeah.
Stafford with a couple of classic boneheaded moments later in the game.
Yeah, trying to do too much, right? He's trying to get the team involved. And, you know, in the first touchdown, he made a great move. He made a great play extending the play when he feels the pressure from the right and he knows based on the play that the pressure's coming from the left. You can see him duck and almost anticipate a guy coming at his back.
He was bracing himself.
He was, because he knows that if the guy in front of him is right there, the guy behind him is probably right there as well. But he ducked, braced for it. It didn't come, and he found the backside was open and goes to the backside. Marvin Jones doesn't give up on the play, and then all of a sudden you got a big touchdown out of it. So, but they, yeah, that came to bite him later, especially in the fourth quarter, right? And so, you know, you can't turn the ball over. When you're having a hard time stopping the run, and even if you're stopping the run in the second half, when you're not stopping the run in the first half, you're turning the ball over. They're executing on offense and keeping the ball. You can't win that way.
And what are you forced to do in that situation? You start throwing the ball and you go away from the run.
Oh, yeah, for sure. That leads us to our final point.
Well, that was the
segue?
That was the transition.
Nice. Yeah. I apologize. Stepped on you there.
It's all right. Did you want to finish
off? No, you go ahead. I was trying to
apologize to the audience for the disjointedness of today's podcast. The Seahawks own the line. On both sides of the ball.
Yeah. Look, 40 passes versus 13 runs is not how you win football games. You know, look at Miami. It was the flip-flop, right? It was 33-22. And you're hoping for that balance. And we've had questions about this in the past, about getting that balance. And they didn't. They moved away from the run very quickly, and that was a big problem. And that really helped. That really stunted them on and their offensive production.
Snap counts, week 8 snap counts. We see more and more of Kerryon Johnson.
Yeah.
That's probably the only thing to walk away from here.
Yeah, we had some scheduled offensive linemen. The defensive linemen are getting more and more snaps, which is nice.
When you mean scheduled offensive linemen, you mean breaks.
Correct, yeah, the scheduled breaks that we kind of talked about at the top with Decker in mind.
All right, so we're going to slide right into Golden Tate questions. We'll hold off on talking about the Vikings for a little bit.
Yep.
Like with the snacks deal, this is a move for a third-round pick, and it's more about the future than it is about the present.
Yeah, a lot of people got hung up on the fact that Snacks was a move to win now, when realistically, I believe Snacks was a move to get them down the road. Nose tackle was a big issue for them. They knew it was going to be a big issue moving forward. The Snacks deal was a long-term move. This is the same thing, right? A third-round pick, when you look at the value of the other wide receivers that went around the league, is actually very good.
Yeah, unless you were Amari Cooper.
Well, but that's Dallas.
I know. When we pulled the same quote-unquote genius move way back, a genius move, back with Roy Williams, and we got the first and third-round pick, which was a bigger fleecing than this one was.
Yeah, for sure. Dallas really learned their lesson.
No, Jerry will know. Because he did it with Joey Galloway way back, almost 20 years ago.
Sure. But yeah, this is a move for the future, and I think people kind of both these trades are about the future, and I think that's something we need to keep in mind.
Now, people have brought up to me, it's like, well, they would have gotten the third round pick anyways if he would have left in the offseason.
Right. And that was one of my... I did a Periscope where I talked about some of the false narratives that were rumoring around on social media and whatnot. And one of them was, they're going to get a third-round pick anyways. Well, okay, it doesn't work like that, unfortunately. The compensatory picks are based on the totality of the offseason moves. It's not based on a, you lose this player, you get this pick in return. So when we're looking at the Lions offseason, they have some cap money and they have the potential to sign a big player, and there's these offsetting measures, right? So if you lose a big player like Golden Tate, but you sign a big name player, they offset and you don't get a compensatory pick. So there's no guarantee that they were going to get a pick, much less a third. Getting a third, look, they got a third for Sue, okay? Because mm-hmm. he signed that massive contract. You don't get thirds unless those are the types of deals that people get. And Golden's not getting a Ndamukong Suh-type deal. So you're probably not getting a third out of this to begin with. But if you did want get one, it would probably be a fourth. But again, it's not in 2019. It's 2020, right? So you are delaying it a year, and it's probably a lower pick, if a pick at all.
All right, let's get into the questions, because we'll probably address
okay.
a lot of the other stuff we want to talk about with Tate.
Okay.
The amiable Lions fan, how different do you expect the offense to look without Tate? Do you think we'll see more multiple back sets with an increased use of motion? Kerryon and Theo on the field together could be deadly.
Yeah, I do think that there's going to be more two-back sets. I do think that they're, you know, remember Patricia comes from the Patriots. The Patriots led the NFL last year in two running back sets, and they've tried to carry over some of that offensive concepts. So Kerryon and Theo on the field at the same time is going to be interesting. I think they're also going to use Ballore a little bit more to try and use some power in situations. But the nice thing about Kerryon and Theo, and you can add Amir into this as well, is that you can split these guys out wide. And when you want to split them out wide, you can create matchup problems. Now, we'll get to another question that we have about Theo here in a minute about you're still not going to want to use him at like wide receiver. You're still going to want to put these guys in the backfield. Now, you said, will they go to motion? Yeah, if they put two backs in the backfield and then motion one out, that'll sure help. But as from an offensive concept overall, it's going to be less three wide receiver sets, and you're going to look at more two running back, two tight end type sets. And you know, I think it's going to be interesting to it's almost like you're going to see a big shift in how they deploy people. But when they do want to go three wide, I am expecting it to be TJ Jones initially, and then from TJ Jones, it's going to be if they want to have some specialty moves for Brandon Powell, like they had with Jamal Agnew, I think that's going to work its way in. But for those of you hoping to see the Brandon Powell show, I don't think that's coming. There's been a lot of talk about him replacing Golden Tate. I think TJ is going to be the veteran guy. Remember, he's been in the system 3 years, so he understands what Jim Bob Cooter does and what he wants, and he'll probably step right in and be able to help out quite a bit.
All right, Braden Latour asks, with Tate gone, how likely are we to see Theo Riddick get more snaps in the slot, even with Kerryon Blount on the field? So three backs on the field.
Well,
back to a long forgotten time in football.
I think you say, I think that slash is Kerryon or Blount, maybe.
Why don't we put all three of them?
Yeah, well, they did an inverted wishbone a couple weeks back, right? But it was a tight end and a fullback. But I do think we'll see more Theo Riddick in the slot, but it won't be initially. If they line Theo up in the slot, and I know people are saying he was a slot receiver at Notre Dame. He was for a year or two. He was a slot receiver at Notre Dame. But you take away his quickness and his ability to be effective in a matchup situation if you just put him at slot receiver. If he's a slot receiver, they're going to put a corner on him, and then he loses that advantage of athleticism that he has. But if you put him in the backfield and then motion him out into the slot, and you get a linebacker or a defensive, like a safety, well, now you have an advantage with Riddick. You really want to find ways to get him into a slot-type role, but only if you can get him matched up against a linebacker.
Brandon Kerr, who now is that third-down go-to guy?
I don't think there is one. I think... they're going to have to manufacture somebody, but I don't think there's going to be a guy. I think Luke Wilson has a real good chance, or Michael Roberts has a real good chance because of the types of routes that they run. If they start running Kenny a little bit shorter on those in-breaking routes, then he's got a shot. I mean, they could do the same thing with Marvin, but they're going to have to find those kind of intermittent guys. And the tight ends really haven't shown that they can be reliable enough to be a third down guy. People will pick up on Theo if you're using Theo in that manner. So I think there's got to be variety. I don't think it will be one. I think it will be multiple guys that they just have to spread it out to.
Cindy P. asks, with the departure of one of the Lions' top wide receivers, do you see the tight ends getting more balls thrown their way?
I do think that would be part of the game plan, to start spreading things out a little bit more to the tight ends. Just because I don't think TJ Jones is any better than your tight end options at this point. And so you're going to try different sets, and that means more targets.
All right. Richard, are the Lions going to use tight end Michael Roberts more in the passing game now that Tate is gone? He could be a weapon in the seams and the red zone. Do you agree? Of course, Eric agrees. Loves Michael Roberts.
I do love Michael Roberts. And you know, we saw 2 games ago, he had, two catches on three targets for 2 touchdowns, right? And last game he outsnapped Levine Toyolo, and Toyolo dropped one. And so I do think the opportunities for Michael Roberts will start to increase, and if he can continue to show that he's a blocking back, and I do think opportunities for Michael Roberts will grow. He's kind of a sleeper guy who I think is could really see an increase in targets here.
All right, Ohio's Lions. Is the combination of an ugly loss, trading Tate, and a Patricia outburst a sign of dysfunction or just coincidence?
I think it's coincidence. I think it's because I think that there is, when negative things happen, we tend to look at and notice all the other negative things that are happening and then want to clump them together. The same thing was true with the win. When we won against Miami and then we saw the Snacks-Harrison trade, it was, look at all these great things that are happening. And now that we've lost, it's, look at all these bad things that are happening, right? And so I think it's a coincidence that we're looking at these negative things this week.
So you would say that in my 25 years of closely following the Lions, that I've just seen a string of dysfunctional coincidences?
Well, I mean, I think every situation is different, but I think I think in this particular situation, we look for what's happening based on wins and losses in a lot of situations, and I mean, I just pointed out a couple points, and I think this is a situation where people are feeling low. They've just traded one of their more high-profile players that is a fan favorite, and you're feeling down. And when you're feeling down, you're looking for the
for negatives. Misery loves company.
Yeah, you know.
So this is not all curse related.
I don't think it's curse related.
Okay, that's good to know.
Look, I think
sometimes I get a little off, a little off the handle.
No,
I don't think any of this is part of the curse. But
I do.
Just wanted to make it clear.
I do think the Patricia outburst is connected to the Golden Tate, because it was a very emotional atmosphere right now in that 24-hour period in Allen Park. But I want to make things clear that the outburst was something that had been building for months as well. This wasn't a isolated incident that just it boiled over because emotions were high, in my opinion, and I could be wrong, but you have to make a tough deal. You are hurting your team on offense this year in order to make a move to make the team stronger down the road, and you get good value for that. But I think you're losing a guy who's, you got to remember, Tate was a guy who spent time with Patricia in the locker room, in the film room before the season began. The two of them, one-on-one, went over Patriots film to look at how he can improve. And Patricia is very much a player's coach. You know, like we talk about Caldwell being a player's coach. Patricia is a guy who likes to, I don't want to say he plays favorites, but he likes to relate to his players, and Tate was a guy that he had built a relationship with, and so we've got a situation where he's losing a guy that I'm sure he had a nice relationship with, and that he has to deal him, and emotions are high. And then a situation happens where he doesn't handle himself well based on a relationship with a reporter that is, what, tensed, I guess is the right word, maybe, where they had been clashing for a while now, and it just kind of boiled over. And so I think emotions, so you can connect the Patricia outburst and the Tate into an emotions thing, but I don't think it has anything to do with the loss. I think the loss was just what it was.
I don't know. If we give you another 20 minutes, you might be able to talk yourself into it. We're getting there. All right, next question from the Bood Adides. Aside from Tate to Philly, what's the most surprising trade you saw across the NFL?
Did you see a surprise? I mean, what was your most surprising trade?
I don't know.
Demaryius Thomas for a fourth?
No, it's not that surprising. I didn't see anything.
For me?
Nothing shocking.
Well, Clinton Dix for a fourth.
All right, now you're on to something.
That was a little surprising to me.
Why would Green Bay should always be in it, so yeah.
Yeah.
Why would they be getting rid of this guy? Unless they like one of the younger guys who's growing
Jones,
into it.
Yeah. Right? I mean, former, second round picker or something like that, right? I was surprised that Ha-Ha went, and I was surprised he went for a fourth. I really like Ha-Ha a lot. The only other one that surprised me was the Rams dealing for Fowler and giving up a third and another pick as well.
They're in win now mode.
But he's a rental. He's in the same situation as Golden Tate. And
win now.
And Fowler is not a guy that the Rams can afford next year. And so
win now.
That's really what it is for them. Really, that's what it is. But I mean, of the Rams and the Philly, Rams and Philly both made a move to get a rental to try and get them to the Super Bowl. Well, one of those, only one's getting there. So one of them's going to look like they made a bad trade.
Well,
one of them's going to get there.
You got to take a chance.
Potentially.
So
Ha-Ha was probably the most one to me. The Fowler one was the one I liked the least.
Moving on to the Minnesota Vikings that we will play this Sunday.
Yeah, let's do this quick. We all know Minnesota.
Minnesota's favored by 5.
Yep.
The referee's Pete Morelli, and he's right around that NFL average, just one penalty above it, 14.71 points per game. Yep. We'll get Tom Brenneman and Chris Spielman, who have been reunited now that the World Series has ended, and Chris Spielman, as always. I felt for the first time, maybe it wasn't the first time, but really strongly, that Spielman was openly rooting for the Lions.
That's what I heard.
That's what it definitely
felt
like.
I didn't listen.
He's been more objective for most of his career
when
he's done the Lions games, but not Sunday. It was right. And it might be because of the Moore thing, because he was going out on the field, he was wearing the jersey and all that.
I got to talk to them. I liked Roger Brown and Herman Moore.
They say Roger Brown's a funny guy, great guy.
I liked him a lot.
Yeah.
He weighs 186 pounds now.
Is that what he weighed when he... No, he weighed like...
He was the first NFL player to be over 300.
Yeah, I knew that from somewhere.
He told us his playing weight was 328, and now he's at 186.
Well, that's good. That's smart.
That's a high school kid he lost in weight. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, my goodness.
A lot of those guys do that. Look at a Mark Sklar,
Joe Thomas
that we see on TV. Yeah, yeah. Right? I mean... It was their job to be that heavy. It's not like they were meant to be that heavy.
Really liked Roger Brown. Right. I liked him a lot.
Vikings head coach Mike Zimmer, his record 4-3, won the season last week. They lost to the Saints 30-20. Odd enough game where the Saints scored 30 points, but Drew Brees throws for less than 200 yards. We're not going to dig too deep in the offense, like Eric said. We're going to blow through a lot of this. The offense is balanced. A lot of you guys and gals out there listening have fantasy football teams. I'm sure they're peppered with the Vikings' offensive talent, starting with Kirk Cousins at quarterback, who's often in the top 10, and fantasy scoring. A lot of you are probably upset about Dalvin Cook being on your roster because he hasn't played much this season.
Two limited practices this week, but with a bye in week 10, it's possible that they sit Cook another week to rest and try not to push him back too early. It's kind of up in the air because Latavius Murray has been playing well.
And if the Lions are going to take a loss and it's going to look bad, a lot of the folks out there have Latavius Murray hopes that he puts up a nice little showing. The wide receivers, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, and then on down the line with Laquon Treadwell, Brandon Zylstra, Aldrick Robinson. Now Diggs and Thielen, although Diggs is hurt a little bit, form one of the better combinations in the NFL wide receiver.
Now Diggs has not practiced this week, neither Wednesday nor Thursday, and he is claiming that he's just getting rest and that he's expecting to play. But if he misses, this is a a massive upgrade for Detroit if he misses. But expecting him to play, it's going to be very interesting to see how it plays out. I've seen a lot of speculation on how Detroit is going to match up with these guys. I think it's going to be Slay on Diggs because that's what they've done in the past. And then I do think, bless you, I do think that it'll probably be Nevin Lawson on Thielen. People thinking that Tease is going to cover Thielen, I don't get that. And if they do that, I don't get that. Tease is not a good matchup for Thielen, but Lawson is. So Lawson is much better. So I would, and based on snap counts and how they these guys have been used, you know, maybe Lawson plays Diggs and they put Slay on Thielen because Thielen has had such a great start to this season. But yeah, I don't expect Tease to get on either of these guys unless Minnesota moves somebody into his coverage area. But with man coverage being applied by the Lions, I think it's going to be Lawson and Slay trying to shut these two guys down.
All right, so answering a couple of quick questions, Zach Moran says, with the issues we've had covering Seahawks receivers, do you think the secondary will be able to limit the damage against a better Vikings receiver core?
I think the Vikings are just, they're good enough that it's going, you're going to have, you're not going to be able to stop them, you're going to try and limit them. But I also want to point out Cousins isn't Wilson.
All right, Mary Lamos asks, we know the Vikings are going to be tough to cover defensively, especially in the secondary. Can our squad handle the matchup with Diggs and Thielen?
Yeah, I just
kind of touched on
it. Yeah.
And finally, Corey Rayburn, should Thielen be the biggest concern heading into the game this weekend? Yes, if Slay is covering him.
Yeah, I think Thielen is probably their best offensive weapon right now with both the other Cooks and Diggs banged up.
All right, a tight end, they got Kyle Rudolph, David Morgan, and Tyler Conklin, the fifth round pick. Mostly you'll see Rudolph.
Yeah, I love David Morgan, and Conklin was one of the guys I really liked out of Central Michigan this year. So they got a nice trio of tight ends. They just don't utilize them. They don't. The shift here with the new offensive coordinator, they really haven't used the tight end a lot.
Left to right on the offensive line, they got a well-known Riley Reiff, Tom Compton, Pat Elflian, Mike Remmers, and Rashad Hill.
Compton has a he was one of their big free agents that they brought in. He has an MCL injury. He has not practiced this week. If he doesn't play, then it's Danny Isadora who's going to come in. F-line is really good. I really like him at center. But Reimers and Compton have not been great, and Isadora's not great either. So there's some advantages for Detroit with their interior defensive linemen, especially the way that the Hand and Harrison and Ashawn have been playing recently, where I think there's a big swing to Detroit on the interior.
Justin Gunn asks, in your opinion, how does the Lions defense, more specifically the defensive line, match up with the Viking offense? Would it be fair to say the Seahawks are the best offensive line we'd see thus far?
No, I don't think they have.
Maybe the Cowboys?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
All right, moving on the defensive side of the ball. The Vikings run a conventional 4-3 with defensive ends Everson Griffin, who came back from injury last week, and Danielle Hunter as the defensive ends.
Well, Griffin was actually out on mental health leave. If you remember, he had an incident in a hotel room that was actually kind of scary. He took about a month or so off, came back last week. Excellent player. Hope he's mentally prepared and has everything working for him. Real scary issue with him. But Hunter was a problem last year for the Lions.
Rick Wagner.
Yes. Him and Wagner battled twice, and Wagner lost both. Hopefully Wagner has either figured it out, or they're going to help a tight end in that situation.
He's one of the top five highest paid right tackles in the league.
You know, and he's been playing very well this year. So the matchup says it should be good. Hunter has won the last two. Hopes are high that Wagner can keep up.
In the middle, we got Linval Joseph with Sheldon Richardson at the three technique. Jaleel Johnson from Iowa, Tom Johnson, and Jalen Holmes will be coming off the bench.
Yeah, good depth on the interior. It's going to be a real challenge for the Lions' interior offensive line. And if Lang has to sub out with Wiggins, that's an area that we're going to see how the pocket can hold up, because they could be a problem.
The Mike linebackers, Eric Kendricks with Devontae Downs coming off the bench, seventh round pick.
Kendricks is a good guy, fast, but he's not elite, but he's a good player.
Maybe good news for Lions fans. Sam backer Anthony Barr has had a hamstring injury with no practice this week.
And he struggled this year too, so they've had a little bit. They've had problems with that Sam linebacker spot.
The Will linebacker, there's the pride of the Michigan Wolverines, Ben Gideon, Derek Wilson coming off the bench.
Again, this linebacker core it's okay, but it's not as elite as, you know, they're not playing as well as they did last year.
All right, and the defensive back, starting with the corner, Xavier Rhodes, who's had an ankle injury. Michigan, pride of Michigan State, Trey Waynes, Mackenzie Alexander, Holden Hill, and Marcus Sherrills.
Yeah, and they lost Mike Hughes, who was their first-round pick to IR, but they still have a good corner group.
It's a good group.
Rhodes typically will cover Marvin. That's what they do traditionally. Marvin has won the last couple as well, so it'll be interesting following that. That will put Trey Waynes on Kenny Golladay. It's going to be a fun little matchup against two big body guys. If Golladay is going to step up, he's going to have to take advantage of a Trey Waynes who's been getting better and better as time has worn on.
Safeties were well accustomed with Harrison Smith and Andrew Sandejo.
Yeah.
And the kicker, always shaky, even though they have the somewhat consistent Dan Bailey back there now.
Yeah.
Matt Wiles, the punter, and Marcus Sherrills will see a lot of the returns.
Yep.
Do we have a prediction? We can do that now?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, you know, you suckered me in last week, Eric. You had me believing, and all the signs were pointing to classic Lions loss, which is what we got.
So
I got to go with the Vikings 31 and the Lions 17.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, well,
I have a much closer score. 24-28, but I'm also picking the Vikings to win.
24-28, you got to put the winning score.
I always think the Lions first.
Put the Lions, you're a finalist.
I have the Vikings 28, Lions 24. Last time I picked the Lions to lose, they beat the Patriots. So
well, that's a good omen. Maybe you're gonna have to pick them to lose every week. So moving on to the podcast questions. First from Kyle Klein. What do you think is the Lions' path to winning the division? Oh man. Reminds me of the Simpsons episode when, Moe's telling Homer when he's going to fight Dredrick Tatum for the heavyweight championship. Like, you got to picture yourself winning. And, you know, Homer's imagining a congenital heart defect has felled Tatum on his way to the ring. You know? Although the Lions are only one game back. I know, right. I'm being a strong pessimist here. Yeah. Lions are one game back. Bears are 4-3, and the Lions are 3-4 with the Packers and Vikings still to climb over, and they'll have their opportunity to do that with kind of do that with one of them this weekend. They can only tie the Vikings.
But you hit the nail on the head. If you're talking about getting into a wild card, then it's much different than winning a division. Winning the division is a tough path. Let's say they split their non-division opponents. They beat Buffalo, they beat Arizona, they lose to Carolina, they lose to the Rams, right? That means you've got to win 4 out of your 5 division games in order to go
9-7.
Yeah. Right? And to go 9-7, that means you probably have to beat Minnesota twice.
You got to beat either Minnesota or Chicago twice, and you have to win at Lambeau.
I think you can. I think you could lose at Lambeau and beat the Bears twice.
You need to beat all four. Yeah, you would have to win all four of those games.
I think if you're going to win the division, the key is you beat the Vikings twice. You don't beat the Vikings twice, the division is going to be a big problem.
It's quite a mountain to climb, and I don't know if they're going to make it.
I mean, it's no, Dredrick Tatum has a heart failure type thing, but you know what?
I don't know. With the Lions' track record, it kind of has
But it is a daunting task to get to the division. If you lose to the Vikings, maybe the division is out, but it's still the wild card is still in play.
Lions for Life asks, going into midseason, what do you feel is the Lions' biggest weakness and biggest strength? Well, I don't know. The biggest defense is the run defense. Although that might be being addressed. Or maybe I'll change that. Maybe it's offensive consistency. Even with Golden Tate, this was very inconsistent offense.
Yeah, it's tough to really nail down biggest weaknesses and strengths right now because of what you just said, the inconsistency. The inconsistency is a real problem, and we don't know who's going to show up. Is it the team that made Tom Brady look like a rookie, or is it the one that made Dak Prescott look like a Pro Bowler? You know what I mean? Like, there's just so much inconsistency that it's hard to tell. I'd say a strength is Stafford has been playing well.
Boneheaded mistakes late in games.
Other than a couple turnovers last week, he's had a nice, Kerryon Johnson has played well. Weaknesses have still been stopping the run, like you said, and then just that they just haven't been able to mentally adjust. If we're talking about a specific unit, I would say the linebackers are still the biggest problem on defense.
Mike Holloman asks, what position groups are impressing, depressing, and middle of the road? Surprises and disappointments. Well, we kind of covered a chunk of that.
Yeah. Again, I think I want to see that balance. The run game has looked nice. I would like to see them not move away from it.
All right, Jim Young, after the continued fumbles, it's a time to move on from Amir Abdullah. I think our fourth string running back. It's a lot of chatter. We get a lot of, and I know because he was a second round draft pick. Everybody's excited to get him. We haven't had a running game. Sure. But he's buried down the depth chart now. And yes, I think they're going to be moving on from him. I think he'll be around all year, but that's probably it for him.
Well, if they do move on from him, they could move on from him from kick returns. And if one of the other guys can step up, like a Brandon Powell, then or TJ Jones, then it's possible. I don't think they're going to move away from Ramir yet. But if he puts another one on the turf, then yeah, he's going to be in trouble.
All right, Hutch asks, what's the deal with Miles Killebrew? I don't know, that was just a
Jerry Seinfeld.
Read as Seinfeld. Right. I loved his potential, but it seems like he can't find his way into the starting lineup.
Yeah, he hasn't played defense yet. He has been a special teams only player all season, and that looks like that's what he's going to be.
Are you giving up on him, Eric? Is this another one you loved.
It's not that I'm giving up on him, but as much as I think he fits the system, the fact that he hasn't seen... Look, when Trevor Bates came on the field last week instead of Miles Killebrew, when they went through the injuries to Jones and Reeves Maben, that told you everything that you need, because Bates was just promoted to the active roster not long ago. Killebrew is a special teams only player. That's it. He's not going to be anything more, I don't think.
Daniel Reese, an MSU Lions fan, asks, would Tease be an option at safety or matchup strictly on the tight end or running back?
He's not an option at safety because he doesn't have the range. I like his instincts, but I think he's much better as a matchup guy. Tight ends might be okay. Bigger body wide receivers is really where he does his best work.
Jimmy asks, how bad has Agnew's loss been for our defense? It seems like a domino effect has taken place since he's gotten hurt, and it has enabled quarterbacks and offensive coordinators to more easily find our weak link and pick us apart now. Am I imagining this, and do you think it'll get better? Thanks, guys.
Okay. I agree with some of it, but I also don't agree with it because you got to remember Agnew got torn apart in Dallas. And
well, once again, one bad game. Some guys are going to get exposed in certain games because of matchup situations.
Right. And I do think that Agnew's loss is felt in three phases because he played in all three phases. And I do think his speed to quickness is something that the Lions don't have anywhere else on the roster. They have guys who are fast and guys who are quick, but not that combo. So, I do think that his loss has been felt because it's limited their ability to play matchup defense as much as they want to. I don't think it has limited them enough that it's opened the playbook for OCs or anything like that. I think I don't think it's exposed a weak link, but I do think it has had it has caused problems in the back half. So I partially agree with you there, Jimmy.
MSU Lions fan, what do you think happened to Tracy Walker as the snaps are seemingly decreasing by the week?
His snaps have been increasing every week until last week when he saw one snap, and there's one reason why he went down to one snap. They were getting blown out. If they were winning, he's their guy that they put on the field to help close out nickel and dime type situations when they go to multiple like six or seven defensive backs, and he's the guy that plays deep safety and helps them preserve a lead. That's his role right now. You have other safeties ahead of him. When you're losing, Tracy's going to see the bench more than he sees the field. If they're winning, expect to see more Tracy Walker.
All right, moving on to podcast questions pertaining to the offseason. Now, folks, this isn't Eric throwing in the towel. He just wants to start digging into some of these.
Yeah, we get these questions every week, and typically
I blow them off.
Yeah.
Like, screw that. We got to talk about the team some more. We got to talk about this week.
But we're halfway through the season, and with the Golden Tate trade that was an obvious move towards the offseason, I figured we'd try and get a couple in this week.
Brad Rollins asks, podcast question, what dead money comes off the books next year, and can you give names and amounts? Then grand total, what we will have in free agency.
All right. So there's a lot of players in contract here. Some of them are important. Some of them are just traditional, like, role players. TJ Jones, Ballore, Blount, Abdullah, Wilson. Those are the main Toyolo. Those are your main guys on offense. Then you have on defense, the key contributors are Ziggy Ansah, Akwara, Lee, Hyder. Now, Akwara, Lee, and Hyder are all restricted free agents, so they could bring them back easily. A couple corners in Shedd and LeBlanc, Eli Harold, Charles Washington as a safety, and a couple linebackers in Calvin Shepard, who we just signed, and then Steve Longer, who's on IR.
Now, to me, is that it?
No, that's the guys that are in contract years.
To me, it sounds like that's only like 20-some million off the books, and that's mostly because of Ziggy.
Well, and it's, but you also have an increase. Well, this is without the increase in cap and anything else. It's actually 41 million off.
41 million. Okay.
So, with losing Golden's contract and the way that the some guys' contracts go up and some guys' contracts go down, they're going to carry right now about 41 million. Now, if they have carryover, that could be upwards of $5 million in carryover, so that number could go up to 46. If there's a cap increase, they've been going up anywhere from 8 to $9 million every year. If that happens, now you're in the 50s. But again, we don't know those things to happen, and we're not anticipating them any just yet. But right now they're sitting at around $41 million, and they have 38 players under contract. Okay?
So this would put them somewhere, in the middle.
Yeah. There's still a handful of teams that are going to have...
The Browns will have like $80 million in cap space.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. The Jaguars have a lot. Tampa Bay has a lot, typically. But they're gonna have a fair amount. They'll have a little bit more than they had last offseason. So to give them some leverage to do things that they want to do, go after certain guys. But the interesting wrinkle is, what if Glover Quinn retires? If Glover Quinn retires, that's another $7.9 million that comes off the books. If TJ Lang's concussion history is too much for him and he retires, that's another $11.6 million that comes off the books. But
then you got to replace those positions.
Exactly. You got to replace those guys. Now, if you cut either of those guys, you have to take a cap hit that goes along with it. But there's another potential almost $20 million in those two players that could come off if either of those two retire. And then people are going to ask about, what if Theo Riddick gets cut? Well, that's another $3.5 million. And what if Sam Martin? People have already looked at him saying he's not the guy he was before. Is he cut worthy because he's an average punter getting above average money? Well, if you cut him, that's another $2 million you could gain. But, like, again, you got to replace these guys. So right now you're at 41. And that number could go up or down, which is one of the reasons that I don't like to talk about off-season stuff right now is because right now they're at 41. They could be at 78, 79. You know what I mean? If things go disastrously wrong and you lose a bunch of guys, or if things open up, like, so it's kind of unpredictable at this point.
Walid Baghdadi asks, now that we have acquired some extra draft capital, what are the main three position groups you can see the Lions investing in? And are there any players that you have already pegged as a realistic option at this early stage?
Hey, look, if I have to pick three, I'm going to say defensive end linebacker and defensive back. And probably corner over safety. Though it's defense is going to be the priority. They've spent a lot of money on offense. But look, TJ Lang retires, you're going to need a right guard. And that's going to probably prioritize over something else. So, but all three levels of defense, probably. And as far as players, there's a lot of players. It's too many to narrow down. The one thing I will say is if their jersey says Alabama, then they're going to fit the system.
All right, BZ Ski asks, Golden Tate now being gone, who do you see as potential replacement as a slot wide receiver in free agency or the draft? I personally think wide receiver Adam Humphries from Tampa is a tailor-made for this offense and would be a cheaper, productive player to add as a free agent.
I typically don't look at free agency right now because it's so far away and teams can re-sign players just as easily as letting them go to free agency. So I don't go through the free agency list right now, but I do spend some time looking at the draft guys. And so I'm going to skip the part of the question about free agency just because Humphries could be a guy that's re-signed and we might not even have the option. But if you're looking at the draft, some of my favorite slot-type receivers are guys that can play inside and out. One of my favorite guys is Anthony Johnson out of Buffalo. He's a guy that's going to be really near the top of my board. He has he's an outside receiver, but he can be a slot. He's a bigger slot guy, but man, he's something special. The other guy is Marquise Brown out of Oklahoma, speedster, like ridiculous speed. He's a guy they could get a little bit later, but he's a terrific player. KJ Hill of Ohio State kind of fits in that same mold, and then Debo Samuel out of Clemson is more of an outside guy that can play inside. But you know, he had a leg injury 2017, and he hasn't quite been the player he has in the past, but that happens sometimes with leg injuries and wide receivers, and it takes them a little bit of time to adjust. So he's another guy to keep an eye on. Johnson, though, he's the guy that I would really love to see in Honolulu Blue.
Arthur, tell me how we can't get a couple of pass rushers, a couple of linebackers, a couple of defensive backs, an O-lineman or two, a tight end or two, and a wide receiver, not to replace Golden, with 40-something million in cap space and 9 draft picks. I'll hang up and listen. I'll take my call off the air.
So, look, there are a lot of needs, and the lack of talent on defense is really a catalyst in what's causing them problems now. But there are depth issues on offense, but the majority of the offense is lined up and secured. So could you need a guard down the road? Sure. But, you know, you may not need one because maybe Crosby's been taking snaps inside and he's a guy that could step up into the mix next year. He's a good enough – he's an NFL player. He could be an NFL starter next year. But could you upgrade your tight end? Sure. I don't think they're ever going to prioritize that tight end. I didn't think they were going to, but now maybe they have to with no Golden Tate. But if you're going to get a slot guy, then maybe tight end takes the back seat again. So, but defense is really where it's going to be. I expect maybe a big splash player and then a lot of basic guys after that.
Eric J. Mawson asks, is Quinn's plan to clear cap space to get a Clowney-type impact player on defense for the team? One big piece and then draft and develop well and some mid-price free agents to fill out the roster. Is Clowney possible or even trade for J.J. Watt? What do you think? Is this the master plan?
I just kind of alluded to something similar. I do think they're going to be looking for an impact edge rusher. And if they can't get one in the draft or in the free agency, then they're going to look to the draft to try and get a guy who can produce. They're going to bring Akwara back because he's a restricted free agent. And that's half of that down defensive end spot right there. You invested in Devin Kennard, so you're happy with that. You really need to upgrade that Christian Jones spot. You really need to upgrade your corner depth. You'd like to upgrade Nevin Lawson. And I think if you can get one of those guys in free agency, it makes the draft a lot easier. And you got to remember, their approach to the draft is, I'm going to draft a guy that can contribute in 18 months, outside of the first-round pick, typically. So they'd like to have these spots filled in free agency, but outside of getting like a big name, the way Bob Quinn has operated is, I'm going to get a bunch of guys that can fit the team depth, and I'm going to have to, you know, spread my money around in order to make it last so that I can overcome injury, like last game when, you know, Decker gets hurt and Crosby steps up and we don't even notice. That's the goal of this team, is to be a deep team where you can recover from an injury. Look, you're never going to get blown away by Bob Quinn in free agency. If you get one guy, I'll be impressed. And I think they're set up for that one guy this year.
All right, that's it. We covered everything.
Awesome. We got a couple shout-outs, though. Three reviews this week. Pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's nice.
Nice things all abound.
There was a three-star in there somewhere, though.
Not from the reviewers.
Not from the reviewers, yes. Just some from random person.
Yeah, we got three written reviews and then a rating. Yeah, I got a three-star. Kept me up at night.
I don't know. I guess we shouldn't be talking when about I found those. Out. Keep that quiet.
You know what, though? Everyone likes to promote their five stars and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, no. We're a little different.
Yeah, we have 1-3, 1-4, 1-1 somehow. And
well, we should.
And now we have our guys that spend the time and write us reviews. So we want to give thanks to those that do that every week. And Ken and Brandon, Roland, and then Martin Vickis, they all wrote really nice things about us. helping us stay out there, helping us stay high in the mentions on the podcast platform. So when you go to look for us, you can find us.
Yep. So special thanks to the three of them. Special thanks to all of you listening. And a special apology going out to my parents, who are not bears, but wonderful folks. And they always pushed that reading was fundamental. And let's hope we get a win this weekend, because it'll be a big help to Prove a much beleaguered fan base.
Yeah.
And we'll see how it goes. And until then, let's go Lions.